Picture this. You've got your clearance. Ground is talking. The ATIS is checked. The weather is holding, and you're mentally already en route. The plane is loaded. The passengers are settled. And somewhere in the back of your mind, a little voice says, "Did I actually brief the departure?" Not the route, not the destination weather, the departure itself. I am Tower on Radio Hangar, and today we're getting into the briefing items that too many instrument pilots skip, rush, or assume they've covered when they really haven't. The kind of items that don't matter on 99% of flights and matter enormously on the 1% when things go sideways right after rotation. This one comes to us from the team at Bold Method, and it's one of those pieces that reads short but hits hard if you actually stop and think about what you're reading. Before we get into it, a quick word from today's sponsor, AviationSoul.com. If you've earned a milestone in aviation, there's a coin for it. From first solo to airline transport pilot, Aviation Soul builds challenge coins that mark the discipline and pride behind every step in flight. AviationSoul.com. All right, four items, four things you should brief before every instrument departure. Let's work through them one at a time because each one deserves more than a checkbox. Number one, the obstacle departure procedure. Every instrument departure begins with a question. And the question is, what are you flying away from? Not in a poetic sense. Literally, what is in front of you and to your sides in the first few miles after wheels up? The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, publishes obstacle departure procedures for airports all over the country. Sometimes they show up as a graphic procedure on your chart. Sometimes they're textual buried in the front matter of your approach plates. And sometimes, at an airport without a published procedure, the FAA has essentially told you, climb straight ahead at 200 feet per nautical mile until you reach 1,000 feet above airport elevation before turning. That climb gradient sounds straightforward until you realize that the standard assumes a specific aircraft performance profile. And it assumes you're climbing, not limping, not nursing, a rough running engine, climbing. The briefing question for item one is not just, do we have a departure procedure? The question is, have I read it? Do I understand the course and altitude constraints? And does my airplane meet the climb gradient required? Bold Method makes a point here that doesn't get said enough. Some graphic obstacle departure procedures, the ones with the specific routing on a chart, carry a climb gradient higher than the standard 200 feet per nautical mile. Some of them require 250, 300, even higher. And if your aircraft can't make that gradient, the procedure isn't actually protecting you. You need to know that before you're climbing into IMC at night with terrain on both sides of the valley. Pull the departure procedure. Read the climb gradient. Know your aircraft's actual performance in current conditions. That's step one. Number two, the engine out emergency procedure. This is the one that makes pilots uncomfortable because nobody likes to think about losing an engine on departure. But the instrument pilot's job is to think about it before it happens, not during. Here's the practical reality. If you lose power in VMC, you have options. You can see the airport behind you. You can see fields. You can make decisions based on what's in front of your eyes. But if you lose power at 500 feet in IMC, with a solid overcast at 300 feet and rain on the windshield, you are flying on instruments in an emergency with zero margin for thinking time. That means your engine out procedure on departure needs to be briefed and committed to memory before you roll. Not thought about in general terms. Specifically, what heading do I turn to? What altitude am I trying to reach? If I can't make the airport, where am I going? Now, for single engine pilots, this conversation gets harder because you don't have an engine to fall back on. The briefing for you is about making the decision before you go. What are my minimums for this departure? What's the ceiling below which I'm not going to launch into IMC because if I lose power, I need to be able to see something? For multi-engine pilots, the procedure involves knowing your single engine climb performance. Understanding the climb gradient you can actually achieve with one engine inoperative, and recognizing that the obstacle departure procedure you just briefed in item one was written for your full power aircraft. One engine changes the math significantly. Brief it, even if it feels like you're tempting fate, especially if it feels like you're tempting fate. Number three, takeoff minimums. Here's where a lot of general aviation pilots, Part 91 pilots specifically, feel like they're off the hook. Part 91 doesn't legally require you to meet published takeoff minimums. The FAA only mandates those minimums for Part 121 and Part 135 operators, airlines and charter. So as a private pilot under Part 91, you can legally depart into a quarter-mile visibility with a 50-foot ceiling if you decide that's a good idea. The word you want to sit with there is legally published takeoff. Minimums exist because somebody calculated what it takes to get an airplane off the ground. lose an engine and return to the airport for a landing while staying clear of obstacles. They aren't arbitrary numbers, they're margins. And when you operate below those margins, you are operating in territory where the math no longer protects you. Bold Method is right to put this on the briefing list, and I want to add some color. There are airports with non-standard takeoff minimums. The standard for a single-engine airplane under instrument rules is 1 statute mile visibility. But some airports, because of terrain, obstacles, or nearby airspace, have published minimums higher than standard, and those are listed in the same front matter section of your approach plate booklet where the obstacle departure procedures live. Go look. Before you go, if you're launching into IMC and there are published takeoff minimums, know what they are and make a real decision about whether your departure meets them. Not a legal decision. An aeronautical decision. Part 91 gives you the latitude to make your own call. Make sure it's actually a call and not just an assumption. Number 4. Lost comm procedures. You're climbing through the clouds. You've just been handed off to departure. You read back the frequency. You switch over. You make the call. Nobody answers. You try again. Still nothing. You check the volume. You check the frequency. You flip to the backup. Nothing. Now what? If you have not briefed your lost comm procedure before departure, you are making it up in the cockpit while managing the airplane in IMC. And making things up in the cockpit in IMC is how good flights become accident reports. The rules for lost comm are in FAR 91.185. And the short version is this. You squawk 7600. You fly the route and you descend for the approach at your destination at the expected or filed time. But the rule is written for en route lost comm situations. A lost comm on departure, before you've even reached cruise altitude, is a different situation, and it requires a plan. What is your departure clearance? If you lose comm, are you going to continue to your destination? Are you going to return to the airport? If you return to the airport, what approach will you fly? And what is the weather doing relative to that approach's minimums? These are not questions to answer at 2,000 feet with your head in the clouds. These are questions to answer on the ground, with your chart in your hand and your coffee still warm. Some instrument pilots brief this as a simple statement. If I lose comm on departure, I'll squawk 7600, climb to this altitude, and fly this procedure back to the airport. It takes 30 seconds to say and could be the most important 30 seconds of your pre-flight. There's also a practical element that gets overlooked. Frequency reliability varies. If you're departing out of a busy Class Charlie or Class Bravo airport, departure radar is expecting you. They're watching a lost comm at a quiet non-towered field in the middle of nowhere means you might fly a long time before anyone notices you've gone quiet. Brief the plan. Know it cold. Now, let me step back from the 4 items for a moment because there's a bigger point underneath all of this. The instrument rating exists to let you fly in weather. That's the whole premise. But the instrument rating is also, in a very real sense, a commitment to a different level of pre-flight discipline. Visual flight has an enormous margin for error built in. If something doesn't look right, you can usually see it and react. Instrument flight removes that margin, and briefing is how you replace it. The departure is the most vulnerable phase of an instrument flight, because it is the phase where you're closest to the ground. Traveling the fastest in terms of altitude change, and the most heavily loaded with configuration tasks, if something breaks in the first 2 minutes after takeoff, you have almost no time and almost no options. This is why militarized flight operations, airline operations, and professional charter operations all use formalized departure briefings. Not because pilots at those organizations are more cautious by nature, because those organizations have studied what happens when the briefing doesn't happen, and they decided they didn't want those outcomes. We don't have a dispatch department reviewing our instrument departures. We don't have a first officer running the checklist for us. Part 91 flying means one pilot or one crew, a chart, and a decision. The briefing is the only formalized moment we have to make sure the decision is informed. Bold Method suggests treating these 4 items as a distinct briefing that happens after you have your clearance and before you taxi. Not as part of the general weather check, not folded into the pre-flight. Its own moment, its own checklist, if that's what it takes. I'd add one more thought that Bold Method doesn't explicitly say but that I believe is implied. Brief it out loud, even if you're the only person in the airplane. Say the words, say the climb gradient, say the engine out heading, say the lost comm plan. The act of speaking forces your brain to actually process the information rather than skimming it visually and assuming comprehension. There's research in aviation human factors that shows verbal briefings create better retention than silent review. ATC controllers use it, surgeons use it, pilots who fly with a crew use it constantly. If you're solo, you can still use it. Your hypothetical passenger can be the wall of your cockpit. Say the words. One final thing. There's a tendency in general aviation to treat complexity as a sign of skill. The pilot who can shoot an approach in minimums, brief a complex SID, handle a partial panel emergency, and do it all without breaking a sweat, that pilot is impressive. But I want to offer a different measure. The pilot who has never needed those skills in an emergency, because they briefed the departure, knew the procedure, and anticipated the problems before they became emergencies. That pilot is the one I want to fly with. The four items Bold Method lays out are not exotic. They are not graduate-level instrument theory. They are the fundamentals of an informed departure, and every instrument pilot should be able to brief them before every flight in under 3 minutes. The obstacle departure procedure, the engine out emergency plan, the takeoff minimums, the lost comm procedure. Know them before the wheels leave the ground. Bold Method is the source for today's content, and it's worth bookmarking. Their training library is consistently one of the best free resources in general aviation. You can find more from us at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower. Fly the procedure.